Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in the Cafe Book Club. Woo-hoo! We are talking about the resilience factor, and it's going to be 7 keys to finding your inner strength and overcoming life hurdles. But I just want to take a couple seconds. This is our 400th show. So I'm very proud about that, very excited about that. Yeah, it's very, very awesome. And with my cheerleader co-host, Miss Amy Frost, what do you think about that, Amy?
That is more than $3.99 and less than $4.01.
Yoo-hoo!
I know, right?
She just has the deepest things to recite. Yeah, it really is. You know, when I think about how long we've been doing the show, and I'm so grateful that, you know, you're just my great little co-host here. So I just always just love. I think it's just really taken on a new focus and vision and voice that can be out there for people. And I really want to thank you, Aim, for helping to make it happen. And just all of our guests and our continuing just cafe regulars, we just want to thank you for always checking in with us. So thank you so much, because, I mean, you know, we really want to make a difference when it comes to this, just the different kinds of things that we offer, and have it be something that can be meaningful, you know, whether it's personally for you or someone you love, or, and it can make an impact in somebody else's life. I just think it's something that can be just a force for good that really goes out there into the world. So anything else you'd like to add, Amy, before we start jumping into
I believe that the show is really helping a lot of people, or we know our audience are seekers, and there is a problem with isolation, something that I ran into recently, that the Surgeon General said that isolation is killing more people than COVID. Oh, you're moving some papers around. Stop that. And so part of what we do is help people not feel isolated.
Right. Yeah. And and I just really love that we're going through these different books that we have in the cafe. Every one of them touches my heart and really helps me to grow on a personal level. And I get so many stories from people talking about how it's really impacting them and really making quality of their life and their loved ones and just relationships in general just so much better. And gosh, that's what a gift. What a gift that is. So tonight we're going to talk about learning how to avoid thinking traps. And we're like, okay, what the heck is a thinking trap? And it's the
eight common ones. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
That would be a thinking trap.
You know what? That just never gets old.
I know, right?
I don't know why. Every once in a while we get our little sound machine out, and I don't know. Sometimes I think everybody should go to a party with a supply place and get yourself a little sound box.
Everybody
has all different kinds of stuff.
That's right.
I think so.
And I don't know about you, but I want to scream. I've been thinking about my thinking and those thinking traps, and I think it's given me a headache. But let's go.
I think I know what you're thinking on the way that you thought about that. Anyway, we can do that all show. But you know what? And when we were talking about how do we want to put this show together, and I was just like, well, let's do a couple chapters a week and see how it goes. We really get into some of this material, and boy, with chapter 5, there's so much here that we can't even really cover it in a half hour, let alone try to squeeze in another one. And the next show I'm really excited about, because it's going to be talking about our icebergs and the things that we want to have beneath the surface. So it's detecting icebergs. So I think that one's going to be a show on itself too. So just really lots of great information and just stuff that's so many ahas and insights that really, really go with all this stuff. So what was your overall impression with this chapter, Anne?
I do think you have to be careful not to get too overwhelmed, because just taking one little step at a time, because when you start looking at all these thinking traps, I do think it can be overwhelming. So what I want all people to do is just kind of going through this chapter, just start recognizing, oh, that may be a place I get caught up, or that may be a place I get caught up. And no, you don't have to figure this all out today. You know, whatever your age is, it took you this long to learn how to think and communicate. Give yourself the credit that you're going to take it nice and slow and steady. So don't be overwhelmed by all this really great information.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's really great advice. So so first of all, you know, they talk about that from the beginning, you know, Hamlet had believed that we were godlike and the ability was far above those of other animals. And then I love they talk about Jerry Seinfeld, and he talks about that. Imagine that aliens landed in a spaceship on Earth, and the first thing they saw were people trailing after dogs with pooper scoopers. Whom would you assume was the master of the planet?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think
cats,
that's kind of a...
Cats run the planet. Cats run the planet.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they totally do. They allow us to live with them. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
But the beginning of the chapter goes on to talk about that our brain, you know, is just really kind of limited, since our brain only has about 1,500 cubic centimeters of processing capacity, while our five senses have the capacity of taking much more information on it. And it talks about the, you know, it's kind of comparing the amount of quantitative information that a computer would have as opposed to just our sensory overloads that we have. And we're going to talk about sensory overload. That's one of the actually one of the traps of the brain that happens with that. But it's really looking at just these different, and we'll go one by one. I think that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually added on, yeah, there was actually seven that was discovered by Aaron Beck, was considered the father of cognitive therapy. And he came up with the first seven, and then Karen and Andrew went ahead and added on the eighth, which is going to be externalizing. And, boy, that one's real interesting, too. So,
mm-hmm.
But the first thinking trap is about jumping to conclusions. And, boy, don't we do all do that. Boy, that's really true. So what do you want to talk about with that, Aim?
Oh, well, I think, of course, we all would say, yeah, okay, we jump to conclusions, okay. But how do we really make sense of that? And I think something that jumped out for me was on page 98. It says, we suggest that you treat intuitions and jumping to conclusions in the same way. That is, by all means, take them seriously, but treat them as theories, not facts. They are hypotheses to be tested.
Mm-hmm. A good one.
I think so.
Yeah,
so it's about
sure.
Really kind of slowing down the volley. How do you know, right, when you're jumping to conclusions? And just
right.
Really start observing yourself. And I like how, so like treating, you know, this jumping to conclusions and intuitions as, you know, in the same manner. I think that's an interesting concept. I would not have thought of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought about that either. And one thing that they refer to in that section too is talk about phantom problems. You know, this thing that's just kind of out there but not really known, or, you know, you make a lot more of it than that kind of meets the eye. And what I think is really important from that, too, is, you know, feeling like, and then, you know, there's an aspect of the jumping to conclusions is, you know, all each one of these sections actually has a story that goes with it to give an example of what that would look like. And, you know, this one's basically about a guy that's basically getting a message, a phone message from his boss saying, you know, call me as soon as you can. Like, it's really important kind of a thing. And he automatically assumes that he's in trouble and he's done something wrong.
Right.
When this whole assumption could be, you know, he basically, maybe she's trying to give him a one-up on something that's going to be happening that day or
whatever.
You have
no idea. It could be anything.
Right.
You know, like
right.
at the end of that section. So he talks about, oh, my God, he had all these things he's making up in his head. And then at the end, they say, okay, John, at this point, all you know for certain is that she wants you to call. If you assume you did something wrong, you won't be open-minded on the phone and you'll sound nervous. If it turns out you did make a mistake, the best thing you can do is be calm and clear-headed.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, let's try to resolve that as quickly as possible and move forward, right?
Or say
so,
thank
you know,
for the congratulations or whatever. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, and so, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about, too, is am I going to react or am I going to respond? And, you know, responding definitely is an invitation to slow down and be able to back up a little bit and get a bigger picture of everything that's happening. And really, and I love how they talk about responding with resiliency. And that's really kind of one of the, some of the key elements to that, is slowing things down, bigger perspective. Let's take a breath and really look at everything and not consider that it's on fire when we really don't know. I think that's
well,
a really great way of looking at
that. Well,
and
then with the work that I do with this Association of Comprehensive Energy Psychology and the Humanitarian Committee, number one, get centered. And the best way to do that is take some nice, deep breaths. It doesn't have to be complicated. But when it, you know, when anything looks, you know, kind of off center, before you do anything, center yourself by breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I heard, I was watching a YouTube the other day, and the guy was talking about people who smoke and how it's that deep breath in and hold it for a second and let it out. And I was all like, yeah, that's it. That's the way to do it. You know, not that you need to have something on, you know, something lit in your mouth to have that happen. And it had
maybe
something
some
of that kind of behavior.
Their soothing technique, right? But there are
right.
other coping techniques to do with a cigarette.
And that's what the guy was actually saying. He says, you know, people realized that, you know, it wasn't necessarily even the nicotine. It was giving themselves an opportunity to be able to do that. Just think about it, when somebody goes out to take a break and go smoking, what are they doing? They're slowing down. They're taking deep breaths. They're like kind of allowing themselves to be where they are. So they have all that kind of going on, and yet the cigarette's part of the supposed reason why they're making that happen. So I just thought that was interesting.
I do, too.
Yeah. For sure. So number two is tunnel vision, and that one's real interesting as well. It's about the, you know, looking at something where the example was a lady's giving a presentation, and she's got some two or three directors in the room and then people who are peers, and she's, you know, talking, and she's taken quite a bit of time to prepare and wanting to do a really good job with what was happening. But because of her being able to present, you know, she was actually – you know, part of the visioning when it comes to tunneling is, are you more of a positive person or a negative person? And in the example, the woman was more of a negative person, so she was looking for people to find fault and have it to where she wasn't necessarily doing a good job, when the majority of the room was saying they were nodding their heads and really engaged and was appreciating what she had to say. So it's really interesting, the just the sense of what are you focusing on, and it kind of goes to your tendency of, you know, how do you want to be perceiving the world? I thought that was interesting. Anything else with that, Amy?
Yeah, and I think myopic would be another word, you know, you could use. And just you just have things so contained that you could just miss things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because it's really and he said one of the aspects of this is it drains your resilience. Because it's taking a lot of energy to be looking for certain cues when actually there's a lot of different things, positive and negative, going on in the room. And being able to be able, you know, it's that typical reading the room to get a sense of really what's happening with everything. So whether your room is actual room or not, or it's you with the world, I mean, it's definitely having something to be able to look at that. And I think, you know, really coming back to what we were talking about, you know, being able to take that deep breath, to slow down, to look at everything from a different way. So it's, you know, having more of a meditative and kind of a witnessing sometimes to what's happening with you as you're, you know, engaging with people. It can really help you to hopefully be able to take a different way of being into envisioning what's really happening around you. I think that's really an important thing, too. So it's just, you know, when we focus on behavior that meshes with our own thinking, we always have a tendency to ignore the other data in the room. So, you know,
well,
sometimes you said to be,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, just like you were talking about before, when it comes to the amount the brain can take in, yet our senses are like, taking everything in. So our brain's basically trying to, you know, milliseconds of, you know, looking at different things and being able to pull from one thing and not another, being able to, you know. And I think part of it's fight flight for some, you know, unless you can feel totally safe in a room, whatever that looks like. But even if you do fight flight, think about it. If you're not in a place of that, you're calm. You're feeling, you know, feeling like I can be safe here, and you just relax. So you definitely take it in a different way, too. So anything else with the tunnel vision, Abe?
No, I think you covered that well. Let's move on to, because we have eight of them. We're
okay.
At number three. Three,
yeah, can
is
you go ahead and talk about magnifying? Yeah.
And minimizing. So a lot of great information here, but coming over to page 103, it says think about your daily routine. As you drive home from work or talk about your day across the dinner table, do you recount more of the negative events than the positive? So I think, again, people, whichever direction you're choosing to go, you're going to be doing that. And he said, if you fall into this maximizing or minimizing thinking trap, often your personal relationships will suffer. And then it also causes negative moods and slow creativity and slow problem solving, which, you know, could certainly be a problem in the workplace, certainly in your life.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting component that it added on to that about, you know, depending what's happening with your moods and things like that. So one of the things that, you know, Karen and Andrew were really doing with this was coming from looking at the research when they were working with kids that were depressed or had anxiety. So that's a component that really goes into all the different things that they're looking at. And, you know, sometimes it could be a subconscious level of anxiety or depression that we're not even aware of. So I think these are things to kind of give you an aha when you're looking at these different aspects of things that could be basically just, you know, being able to have these traps, you know, whether they call them traps or not. I think it's just a sense of awareness is of something that we have like patterns that are kind of can be running in the background that we don't even know are happening. It's just interesting. So number four is personalizing. And, boy, it's this whole reflex tendency to attribute problems to one's own doing. But what's interesting is when they were doing this, they actually, part of that section, they were talking about how they were interviewing a bunch of kids. And one of the tasks they gave them was, you've got a neighbor who's gone away and you're going to go ahead and water their plants. And, you know, and of course, some kids weren't doing the due diligence and the plants were dying and things like that. And I thought it was interesting because one of the kids said that, you know, the plants should be more resilient. They should just be strong and hardy. They don't really need me. I thought that was interesting. So when it comes to personalizing, are they personalizing the plant along with themselves? So, you know.
That sounds like justifying to me more than personalizing.
Yeah.
So
but I thought that was kind of funny when they were talking like, that plant should just know that it needs to take care of itself because mom and dad are gone. I'm like, well, okay, here we go.
Robin?
Yeah.
There was some kind of really weird noise going on there, so I'm not sure what that was.
Okay, I think I'm scratching my head.
A buzzer or something. Okay, all right. So with the personalizing, they talk about resilience comes when you believe you have the power to control the events in your life, the power to change what needs changing, and that belief is accurate. So if you're always going to believe it's my fault, right, then you're not really looking at the real information. And that, you know, if resilience hinges on whether you believe the internal cause of the problem are not changeable or not, then you're right, then you're like doomed. I can't do anything. And so you're not conditioned to do anything. And, you know, you'll just, not be looking at information that doesn't say it was your fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Because the next one is externalizing, and again, that's the one that they've added on. And externalizing is really
the opposite in a way, right?
Yeah, it's the flip. It's that flip of the personalizing with the problems are really your fault. It's always somebody else, and you know, projecting that where you know you can look at the self-esteem or self-doubt, and what it really does is it protects those things because you're always like, no, that's not me. There's no way that could be me because, you know, I wouldn't be a part of that. So I think that's just really interesting, the way it was just the total opposite. So I thought it was a real great insight for them to realize that that was something that would be something that could be definitely a thinking trap.
Well, and then just the externalizers failed to locate their elements of adversity that are generally their doing and within their control. Right. If it's somebody else, why would I look at me? And why would I look at what I'm doing?
Right. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not me. Yeah. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know. And we know those people. We know a few of those people. It's like, oh, goody.
Yeah. Mhm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
Not naming names, but you know who you are.
Yeah, you know who you are. We'll start rattling off initials. They probably do not. Yeah. Number six is overgeneralizing, and that's really coming from drawing from the responsibilities that strip others of control, and that you know they have no personal they're withdrawing from personal responsibility. So it's having something on a larger scale. It's kind of similar to externalizing, I think. in the way that the way they're putting all their things in such a big way that it's not something that would really be something. Well, because this is so big, it's not like it's something that's really my fault. So what did you think about that, Anne?
Well, if you're overgeneralizing, you're just not really getting down to what is it really. Right? You're just making a vague, vague statements and not really getting to what the heart of what really is going on here. And I think that's the heart of what, you know, this the thinking traps are about. What's keeping you from being a logical thinker, a good critical thinker?
And, you know, we get into critical thinking so much,
Yeah, well, this really is a lot about critical thinking. And so, you know, I used to teach critical thinking at University of Phoenix. And, again, most people don't think about their thinking. And it can save you a lot of heartache, time, money, and energy, being a good critical thinker. Okay, this is a fun one. Number seven, the mind trap of mind reading.
You should know what I'm thinking about that.
I do, but I'm not going to talk about it. You don't know what I'm thinking about what you're thinking, then you don't love me, and I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, and you should know what makes me happy, and you should just be doing that for me instead of me telling you what that is.
You should know what needs to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, oh, my God, what marriages haven't had that issue?
Oh, my gosh, right.
Even if you're working with somebody for a long time, there's that assumption, right, that you can read each other's mind. And if we're growing and expanding, hopefully you can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you can read my mind if I'm never having very few variety of thoughts.
I heard a really great quote over the weekend that said, expectation is the precursor to resentment.
Oh, yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, and I heard that with we visit my friend Mary, and we were both like, whoa. When we heard that, we went, So I'm getting, you know, we hear that earlier in the day. So about every, you know, we have in our conversations, like, well, expectations are a precursor of resentment. So there you go. Yeah. So reiterated that a few times while we were having our conversations. But, you know, that's one thing that I think that's been, for me, such a personal growth is to let go of expectation as much as possible, you know, in pretty much every facet of your life. And that's a practice. It's definitely something
because
you just don't have it.
You do what you do, and then everything else happens next, and then you get to decide again.
Right, right. So it's a practice, for sure on that. So, you know, the mind reaches expectations other than to know what they are thinking. So, you know, and it's that common partner thing that having that jump into conclusions. So there you go.
Well, let's go at the bottom of the number seven. There's a mind reading. It says the next time you find yourself getting upset because someone failed to read your mind, or you believe you have read somebody else's, slow yourself down and ask the other person a question that will help clarify where the communication breakdown has occurred.
Mm-hmm. I just realized you can't read their mind.
Well,
that saves a lot of problem right there.
But, you know, that's a whole nother show. So.
Well, you know, and I think part of that too is like knowing somebody long enough, you finish each other's sentences. Yeah, that going on too. So. Part of the practice is to not do that with one another. And then number eight is emotional reasoning. And I'll look for you to talk about that one, Anne.
Well, it's interesting. You and I talked about offline. Alan Alda has a new, I don't know if it's new, but I think it's a relatively new podcast, Clear and Vivid. And we love how he talks about that his goal is to be a deep listener, and he knows he's listening if he's willing to be changed in a conversation. And I listened to this podcast twice about empathy and the dark side of empathy and how people use that, you know, to get people all emotional, right? And so they don't use logic in their reasoning. So this is alanalda.com, and it's the the dark side of empathy or something like that. And I think it really it really brings this point about emotional reasoning and how it can really cause you to make decisions that may not be the best ones because you're really not. It's really good to, I think, to be what he said. He what the author talks about. He says instead of being using empathy, use compassionate logic.
Yeah, so, I really appreciated that. And they, it's a fun conversation because they really they love to. They're trying to challenge each other, and they're laughing at each other for some of the things that they say. And it's just it's a very fun listen to hear these conversations because it's both of these men are just really so engaged in that topic that it's fun to listen to them you know, theorize about, you know, what it is and what it isn't and things like that. They've both written books about it. So I think it's very interesting of the whole empathy and compassion, being able to look at that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great thing. In the book, they use an example of emotional reasoning with this young guy that he winds up getting challenged to go skydiving. And the closer he gets to the actual event, you know, there's more and more anxiety that gets created with it. And says anxiety is often a direct consequence of belief about a future threat. The proximity and time to the event heightens the anxiety of the false and falsely informs us of a threat being more likely. I thought that was a great sentence. But really kind of looking at that, like, you know, am I really more afraid? Am I really more having this contemplating thing? Or am I buying in to the, you know, the bit, you know, that narrow place of having things being vision, of that tunnel vision. What are people saying around me, and what's really true for me? You know, and part of it could be even, you know, making sure that I'm being liked and people know that I'm, you know, there's a level of peer pressure that goes on with that as well. But I just thought that was really interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and moving next to here is why do we fall into thinking traps? Part of what they talked about, and again, kind of how we started out was, you know, how do you dance with this? And what they're recommending is that you pick maybe the top two of these traps that you feel that you probably get caught in the most, and then you're just going to start working on them. And then later in the book, they're going to, you know, walk through each part of these and really help us to say, well, how do we not fall into those traps? So I hadn't really thought about that this until right now. So what do you think? I'm going to kind of flip through. What do you think that the top two are that you that cause you, you know, some grief, Robin, in terms of, you know, really being resilient and clearly thinking?
I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. My thing, because I think maybe I've known in this last week that I jumped to conclusions. It's like I had an order earlier this week where we got about a minute and a half. But anyway, the card was written to the point where it looked like it was actually a son from mom and dad that was coming back into a home, and they were very grateful that they were there and all that. And come to find out that the card was actually from a dog that had passed away.
Wow.
And I assumed that it was his son that was having a troubled life and he was coming back into the home because of drugs or whatever. And it winded up being a dog that had been taken in because it was in a shelter and had a home with these guys. So it was definitely a different story.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely jumped to a conclusion on that one. And it did humble me. Yeah, it did humble me. So I had that. Within about 3 days, I had three different situations where I kind of figured I thought I knew what it was, but I didn't. I had no idea.
Well, I'm sure that's happening all the time, but now you're more aware of it. And I would say for myself, I'm not as trapped in this as much as I used to be, but blaming myself. I'm much quicker to blame myself than somebody else. And so that's something that I've been working on. And empathy, too much empathy. I definitely am an empath, and so at times that has got in my way of really making a better decision for higher self and more people, I think, you know, than this emotional pull. So I think those two areas are ones that I probably have been working on for a long time, but I'm going to be more conscious of as we're going through the rest of the book.
Yeah, and I know that I've been a mind reader, for sure. But I can
read your mind right now. I'm seeing that. I can see you reading my mind right now. Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading your mind too.
Williams are going to be closing out the show. I'm feeling that. I can see that right now in your mind.
Oh my God, you need your own podcast because you're just so good on this. It's like we're going to start a YouTube channel. Everybody can start getting readings on that. So that's cool.
All right.
But want to invite all of our listeners to, take a look at the chapter. I hope you guys are going through it. On page 121, it's really great because it actually talks about all the simple questions to avoiding the traps with all the different categories that it talked about. And that's a really great one, too. So we may go back to that. So next week we're going to be talking about detecting icebergs. And I'm really excited about this one to see what we've got different kinds of ways of looking at beliefs. And, how can we turn off the different things that really cause us to have a lot of these stuff. So it's going to be an interesting chapter. So, well, thank you,
everybody,
Amy.
Bring an ice cone with
you. Yeah. All right. It's all good. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week here at the cafe.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.